Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Webtoon Wednesday episode, and today I'm going to be talking about a horror series from the platform called Witch Creek Road, and I have the writer of the series, Garth Matthews, joining me. Garth, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. Interesting story. It really hits the ground running. You're really, fast-paced, pedal to the metal. I was very intrigued. I devoured the episodes that were out.
Oh, thanks.
But before we dive into the series itself, I always like to ask people when they come on for the first time sort of about their secret origins. So give us your background, kind of where you're from. Did you grow up reading comics? Like, how did you come to this this state in your life, if you will, where you're a comic creator?
Yeah, so I'm from Canada. I live in BC. And it's one of those things where my parents always had like stacks of comic books in the basement. So I just grew up always having access to comic books and, you know, being able to go down, grab some, read some. So I cannot remember a time in my life where I haven't had comics like within an arm's reach.
So were there, was it American comics? Was it superhero stuff? Was it a mixture? Like what do you remember from your earliest comic book reading as far as titles, characters, that sort of thing?
Probably ones like Batman and Spider-Man. I mean, it was definitely, you know, American comics. There were some older ones that they picked up at garage sales and that were like, you know, Daffy Duck and things like that. But definitely my heart was the superhero comics.
Okay, and so from there to Witch Creek Road, is this your first work, or have you done previous published work, either print or digital, or is this kind of your first big project as a creator?
Yeah, my first one was called The Living Finger, and that came out a couple years ago. And definitely, I did everything wrong that I could have with that one. I guess like with that one, my big plan was like, I wanted to get published as a comic, get it into like Diamond Distribution. And I guess like, because we're talking about webtoons here, so Diamond Distribution is the main distribution network for comics. And generally, like there's this belief that like, if you're not in Diamond, you're not maybe, I guess I put a lot of emphasis on that as proving that I was like a real writer by getting into that. But the problem was, like, I never built that audience. I never showed people what I was doing. And so when I did get that published and, you know, when it did go through Diamond, like, no one knew who I was, so no one bought it. And Witch Creek Road was kind of like my attempt to do things differently. Instead of going the traditional comic route, I wanted to get it in front of as many people as I could. So I did Kickstarter for issue one and issue two, and I put it on, you know, Webtoons, and that was probably the best experience. Was Webtoons,
and now it's kind of blown up. It's this horror series that's it's got a lot of inspiration from a lot of different sort of venues and stories, and we'll talk about that when we discuss the book in general. But it's one of those things where, you know, people hear horror, and I count myself in this kind of group too. Never been a big fan of horror stories or horror movies, but, you know, I say that, but yet I wasn't giving them a chance. And it's only been probably in the last like 3 or 4 years that I've come to see that some of these quote unquote horror comics are some of the best ones out there on the stands in terms of, you know, building character and being compelling and just like sucking you in, right? Like I'll put Black Eyed Kids out there. Gideon Falls is another, and I think Witch Creek Road kind of lives in that same realm where it's just so compelling. So I want to get into a little bit of the story itself, but one last question kind of about your background. Let's bridge the gap here from having that first series that maybe didn't do as well, and now Witch Creek Road, and then your early days of kind of always having comics around. Was there a particular moment, do you remember a time where you said, okay, light bulb has gone on, I want to be a comic creator, I want to be a storyteller, or similar to your growing up with comics, was it just something that was there from your earliest memories?
Yeah, so I figured out really young that I wanted to be a writer. And the problem was, like, as with a lot of us, we get distracted, and I really didn't do anything with it. So it was always like one of those dreams where I wasn't actually pursuing it. I was just thinking about it. So with like the Living Finger, I just woke up one morning and I was like, I got to do this. Like I'm wasting time here. I just need to try. And so getting that published was definitely a nice boost to the confidence. And then Witchery Code, like I said, it was really just me trying to fix the mistakes that I made with the Living Finger.
About what age was that where you said, okay, you know, if I want to be a writer, I've just got to do it and stop making excuses. Do you remember?
I'm definitely probably a lot older than a lot of the readers in that. It was probably about 39 when that happened. And yeah.
So I find that to be amazing because it's one of those things where people feel like I missed my window. I should have done it when I was young. And yeah. I see creators online. Jimmy Palmiotti is one that will do this frequently. He'll put out a list of creative people, not just comics, but you know, actors or you know, writers in other genres or whatever. And he'll put like what their first big work that put them on the map is, and he'll put their age. And you'd be surprised how like some of these people, they're in their 50s or in their 60s before they really, you know, finally decided I'm gonna do it. So I say that to tell everybody who's out there listening, don't think that your window's passed you by. It's never too late to kind of follow what your heart is or your dream. Or I mean, life's too short, man. Just get out there and do it.
Yeah. And for me too, like I feel like up until that point, I just wasn't in a position where I was ready to invest that much time into it. So maybe I wasn't meant to do this when I was younger. But definitely like never stop pursuing that or wanting it. Like if you get to that point where it's like, I need this, just do your best.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Well, let's go ahead and put the listeners out of suspense here if they're not familiar. Witch Creek Road, what is the story about?
Okay, so I'll talk about season one just because with Witch Creek Road, it's definitely – season one is Witch Creek Road. It's about a group of kids, high school kids who go camping. They take a wrong turn and end up somewhere where they – probably don't want to be, and they end up encountering some demons that they piss off, and you know, things happen as a result of that. So season one was kind of like meant to be self-contained. Season two is kind of like the fallout of season one and introducing a new storyline, which would be like the skinned or the skinned man. But yeah, in a nutshell, season one, definitely like a group of kids somewhere where they don't want to be and bad things happening.
Yeah, and that's sort of maybe a cliche of horror movies. You know, these kids are camping or they're swimming at a lake or wherever it might be. You know, through accident of circumstance, you know, they end up in this place and mystical beings or monsters or a serial killer or some deranged lunatic, whatever it might be. Is that a challenge that it's built in as sort of a cliche and you've got to keep it fresh? Or was there something else at work when you started building it and thought, okay, I want to initially tell the story through the eyes of kids?
Yeah, like I feel like nowadays it's so hard to do anything original. Like everything's been done. So instead of trying to like fight against the stereotypes, you can just embrace it and put your own take onto it. So that's pretty much what you wrote. It's a cabin movie in like my version of that. So Cabin in the Woods, Evil Dead 2, those kind of movies definitely inspired it very heavily. So yeah, I definitely, it starts off with those cliches of like being in the woods, like no cell phone reception, what are we going to do? But yeah, then just trying to put your own take on it because we're all different. And, you know, my version of the story is going to be different from someone else's version of the story. And all I can do is try to tell the best story I can.
Yeah, and I think that's all any creator can do. But I am curious. You know, you mentioned that a lot of the books that you read, comics you read as a kid, were more in the superhero genre. So, like, what is it about yourself as a creator, as a writer, that made you decide to do horror? Obviously, a lot of years between you know, growing up reading comics and where you are now. And you mentioned some of the influences. So, was there a time in your life that you just started being drawn more to kind of the supernatural, the horror aspects? And what made you decide that, okay, when I become a creator, it's horror that I want to pursue as a genre?
Yeah, like probably the first comic that I finished, which hasn't been published or done anything with, was definitely a superhero based comic. Mm. But what I realized was a lot of the characters in it could very easily be horror based characters. And I think that's where I just flipped the switch. I was like, obviously I like horror. I might as well just go all out and, you know, do horror instead of trying to like merge the two.
Yeah, I find horror to be such an interesting genre too, because like I said, neither one of my parents liked horror movies. So as a kid, I just wasn't exposed to it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, like I was mentioning earlier, same thing with horror comics, where I always said I'm not a fan, but I had never given them like a legitimate shot. I'd never just taken the time to read. And then when I did, I discovered, hey, you know, these are pretty good. But I think there's that aspect, and some people probably still think about this. They're like, okay, well, in general, there's a huge subset of the population who doesn't like to be scared, right? Like you don't like to be in a situation where you're scared. But yeah, mm-hmm. You look at these horror movies that do really well, horror stories, you know, the best-selling author, Stephen King, Clive Barker, that kind of thing. So obviously there's another huge subsection of people that do like to be scared. And since you live in that world and you have such an affinity for it, I wanted to get your opinion. What do you think it is about that feeling of being scared, that feeling of experiencing horror, that draws people to it?
I think it's the same thing as like roller coasters. So I hate heights. Roller coasters just freak me out, but I'll still ride on them. And it's that sense of like the adrenaline and the kind of safety fear. Like you get scared, but at the same time, there's this safe kind of like safety net beneath you. You've watched these characters go into these situations, but even though you do feel that kind of like fear for them, you yourself are never in that kind of situation. So you know, there's a kind of safety net there.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, it's, you know, fiction, or, you know, you hope it's fiction.
Yeah.
It's not going to really affect you. So I find that interesting. So as a creator, then is that what you're trying? I mean, you're legitimately telling the story of these characters, and obviously you want it to be compelling. But I guess what I'm asking is basically when you're telling a horror story, is there that added like necessary ingredient to it that is always in the back of your mind that I've got to make sure that I'm instilling a sense of fear or a sense of foreboding or, you know, some aspect, whatever it is, in the reader as they're experiencing this, you know, something that's maybe not necessary in if you're telling a story in another genre.
Mm-hmm. I think especially with comics and that, like movies, it's different because you've got the jump scares where, you know, something can come out and just freak you out because you're not expecting it. But when you're dealing with comics or, you know, novels and that, you don't have that. So you have to rely instead on suspense, like what is about to happen? How is this character going to get out of the situation? And it's also about like letting the reader's imagination do the work. So just as an example, like at the end of season one, where you see, and spoiler alert, where you see Edwin take off his face. We never show that. We just very heavily hint that that's what's happened. And we do that purposely because whatever you're imagining is probably far more freaky than anything we could have presented on the page. So it's that same kind of thing of like, you let the person's imagination do the work and they're probably going to do a much better job of scaring themselves than what I could. Kind of like lead them in that direction, let them take that final step.
So it sounds almost like when you're writing horror, there are a few different tools that you use that maybe you sort of have to rely on that maybe aren't there in other genres. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah. You definitely have to rely on, you know, suspense, the person's imagination to kind of fill in those blanks. It's definitely a little more challenging than a situational comedy where, you know, it's different rules and, you know, different style.
I get it completely. And another thing that I wanted to ask you about, and this kind of goes hand in hand with that, there's so many times, and I've talked to creators that have come on the show, and they talk about drawing from, you know, real life experiences, especially if it's slice of life or relationship or romance kind of things, high school setting. And it's always write what you know, right? There's always somewhat of some different aspects of the creator's personality in the characters they're creating. I have to think, again, with horror, that's a little bit more of a challenge, right? Like, I mean, you, metaphorically, I suppose, you can write about the things that scare you. But for your sake, I certainly hope you haven't had to deal with actual, you know, flesh-eating demons. But write what you know. But how do you adapt that when you're writing horror?
I think it's, like, to go along with, like, write what you know. Definitely some of the characters in Witch Creek Road are based off of friends. So what it comes down to a little bit is putting them into that situation and thinking about what would they do. And that helps inspire the story. Because honestly, like, when I started writing Witch Creek Road, there was only supposed to be one survivor. And there ended up being more than one because of how I figured things would progress with those characters. So definitely, like, things do change as you think about, like, what they would do. I feel like, and I totally get what you're saying, like, about writing about what you know. I think it's more just me daydreaming a lot, like watching horror movies, daydreaming about, like, what I wished had happened instead of, like, what did happen.
Right. And it sounds like that aspect of write what you know comes in creating the compelling characters, creating characters that are realistic, because that's where you can draw on kind of real life experience, right? Like situations, you know, relationships, things like that. But then the more sort of fantastical elements of the story is where the imagination comes in, so to speak.
Yeah.
And then there also has to be the balance, though, right? You have to make sure, and I think it's one of the things that you do really well in Witch Creek Road, and one of the reasons it's so compelling, because in a very short time, you do come to care for these characters. Because like I mentioned at the top of the show, it does just accelerate so quickly into, oh my God, this is brutal. Like, you know, there's not really much buildup. You're just in it all of a sudden along with the characters, which sort of brings the fear aspect in as you're trying to figure out what's going on at the same time they are. But then you've got some nonlinear stuff where you flash back and we get to sort of get to know these characters. And I think, again, that's where once we start caring about them, then the compelling aspect comes in. We want to see what happens to them. So is that also something that as a writer of horror that you're always conscious of? Like, how much real estate in the strip am I giving to the suspense, the horror, the building of that aspect versus making sure that you're giving enough character moments?
Yeah, like it's definitely one of those things where I feel like there's two types of horror. There's the horror that's based off of the characters and you're rooting for them and wanting them to get out. And then there's the other side of horror where it's like you're rooting for the monster. And example, like Friday the 13th, we all know Jason, but how many of us can name even a single victim of his or a survivor? So with Witch Creek, I feel like the monsters probably had more appeal. Like the demons were just cute and innocent and very likable. And same with like Demon Sarah. But at the same time, I wanted to make sure that the characters, the high school kids, had a chance to actually show who they were before they died. Or in some cases, I mean, some of them did survive, but you know, if you don't know who they are, then you're not going to care what happens to them. So it was definitely like a conscious effort to show like these people flashing back to how they are in real life and then flashing forward to like the situation that they're in. And you know, the difference sometimes between those two kind of like worlds.
Yeah. I think it was an interesting choice you took because again, we started sort of pedal to the metal first episode. You could have done it differently, right? You could have not chose to do the kind of the non a linear narrative, and we could have had those few moments that we see later in the strip. We could have had them up front, like, here's where we get introduced to the characters, and we're trying to sort of figure out what the story itself is about. But instead, you chose to really drop us in the meat grinder right away. What went into the thinking behind that, and was that always how you envisioned the story structure in your mind from the beginning?
Not so much in the beginning. Like, in the beginning, I always knew I wanted to just start in the woods and show what's happening. But definitely, like, moving back and forth, it was more just trying to, like, introduce a little bit more of the normal world versus, you know, the situation that they're in right now. Like, I guess the main thing was, I mean, in most horror movies, you get a very quick snippet of these characters before they get thrust into the situation. Whereas in Witch Creek, I definitely wanted to show a little bit more. But if I had taken the time in the beginning to just have, you know, a few chapters of just, like, normal life, I probably would have lost some of the people who were there for actual horror, because it wouldn't have been present in those first few chapters. So that's why there was kind of like a push and pull, almost, where we start off in the midst of the situation, we pull back, show them in real life, we go forward again, situation, and then we pull back and show them in real life, and kind of like go back and forth.
Yeah, and I think it was really effective. And the other thing that I felt like it did, probably for you as a creator, but certainly for me as a reader, is it kind of gave me a chance to catch my breath, and then also give some context and almost make those moments that happen in the woods early on even worse, right? Like, we see that, you know, if these characters had, I don't know, had terrible normal lives, you know, and abused or whatever, or you chose to set it, you know, not in an analog of our real world, so to speak, you know, a typical sort of high school experience, and instead some sort of dystopian thing, then the juxtaposition isn't as great, right? And maybe we don't feel so bad. But when we get a chance to see them in their, you know, quote unquote, normal everyday lives, and we can relate, I think at that point we sort of can see ourselves in the characters more, which again goes back to showing the terrible things they're going through and putting it in context and making it even worse. So were you conscious of that as you were, you know, building it out, or was that something that just is more organic to the story structure that you chose?
Specifically, the main reason behind the structure was there were a lot of characters, and probably too many characters. Altogether, in the beginning, there were like 12 high school kids there, and that's way too many to keep track in your head. So the reason for, like, the flashing back and forth was to more like highlight a few key characters each time. So you would get kind of a snippet of them in high school, them in the real life. You get to know them a little bit, and then you see them in that situation. So instead of getting hit over the head with, like, everything all at once, you're kind of getting these small snapshots of particular characters. That was the main reason for that, because I figured out early on that there were way too many characters there.
Yeah, and I kind of appreciated that there was, and I think the art team did an incredible job of making sure everybody, because it's sort of tough sometimes when you have that many characters, kind of being able to differentiate between them. But I thought that that was handled really well. And the other thing was, it was such a meat grinder. I felt like, well, we needed a lot, because it really allowed you to really, you know, no pun intended, kind of chew through the characters literally. But it also, you were chewing through plot. It was, everything was happening so fast. And some of my favorite stories, that's what happens when you start in the middle of the action, so to speak. And so I almost felt like having those interludes where we flash back, it was almost a chance for us to catch our breath, mm-hmm. and readers. You know, like I mentioned, it just having a chance to juxtapose it, you know, normal life versus this horrific situation they're in, but also a chance to kind of, yeah, okay, let me digest what I've read in the last episode by having this sort of quote unquote normal life episode. But I have to think as a writer, that's probably a lot of fun to really, like, chew through plot and character, but it also has to be a challenge, because you're really packing a lot into these episodes. So, you know, literally when we start talking about the creative process, that's got to put a little more pressure on you to keep creating, you know, new episodes and such. Because a few of these, I feel like if you had wanted to do it differently in terms of structure and not, you know, have it so in our face, you could have spread some of these episodes out over two or three. Obviously, the story would be completely different. It would have a different feel. And I think it works very well the way you did it. But is that an extra challenge? Just the fact that you did choose to basically chew through plot and character so quickly?
Yeah, like if we had probably more time and more budget, then I would love to like extend some of those scenes just for more, you know, character development, more scenes within the cabin, just to show the development of the characters there as well. There were definitely some scenes that had to get cut just for like time constraints and space constraints. But yeah, definitely given more time, it could have been expanded a lot.
So something to save for another version, maybe in a different media, you know, maybe the TV show. I don't know if you're aware of this, but I know some of our listeners may or may not be aware, but the reason that Walking Dead from the first season starts to take a different narrative from the books is because Kirkman didn't know how much time he was going to have with the comics. So he moved it along a lot quicker. And when he went back to the TV, do the TV show, he added in some elements he wished he would have had time to put in the comics. So similar to what you're saying here. So, you know, knock on wood, if we ever get a Witch Creek TV show, maybe you can go back and put in some of those moments. That would be really great.
Yeah, I feel like TV would probably be the best medium for that because you've got so much more to play with.
Right. I agree. But even a feature film, which is a totally different kind of thing, because you did mention some of the inspirations for the story, Cabin in the Woods, I think, Evil Dead.
Yeah, Evil Dead 2.
Yeah. So is that always your favorite sort of, you know, tropes when you start talking about horror and what inspired you? This, you know, out in the woods, cabin, creatures from another world kind of thing. Is that kind of your wheelhouse when it comes to horror?
Yeah, like supernatural and monsters. Like, if you give me a horror movie like Silence of the Lambs, which is really good, but it's just a guy and it doesn't interest me enough, or like it doesn't interest me as much as like Evil Dead 2, where you're dealing with like people possessed by demons, or, you know, Cabin in the Woods, which are like, you know, zombies or a multitude of monsters, depending on which part of the movie you're in. So definitely like supernatural monsters, things like that. That's just, yeah, definitely what I love.
Well, that kind of leads me into my next question here. And that's kind of building the world, really, building the background, the sort of setting of Witch Creek Road. And we're really talking about multiple worlds that you're building, because we've seen some hints that there are, you know, obviously the demons come from another place, you know, whether it's the angles or, you know, the space between the angles and the curves and you know, that you've mentioned it's sort of a void or a darkness. So you've got sort of that world that you're building through sort of hints. And obviously we haven't seen anything, but, you know, different things characters have said. And then we've seen a glimpse of an alternate reality where maybe one of the characters survived in a different way than they did in sort of the main thread. So it seems like you're really building a complex world and background for the story that you're setting Witch Creek Road in. So a couple things about that. Again, was that something you always planned on having it be that complex? And then as a creator, is that the fun part? Like building the world for your characters to inhabit?
Yeah. Definitely. Like, just to go back to the first question there, with The Living Finger, the first one that I created, like in the epilogue, you see the collector, and he's the guy who appears at the end of like Witch Creek Road season one. And there are a few items in his cabinets. And one of the items is the book that was used to summon like the demons for Witch Creek Road. One of them is the knife that is used for like the skinned man who appears in season two. And so definitely like I had ideas even back at the time of The Living Finger that these were all going to be like connected stories in a shared sort of like universe. And now it's just a matter of, you know, being able to tell those stories and you know, show how they do work together.
Well, so, I mean, is that something that you think about long term, even in terms of other stories that you have planned? I mean, sort of similar to what Stephen King has done with his Dark Tower series. And that now, you know, he's even gone back and retconned some stuff to fit back in with other stories he's told. So basically, I guess what I'm asking is your whole body of work at the end, we look back, we'll see that they all sort of tie in some way to each other.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, some of them tie in accidentally, like they ended up tying in unintentionally. Like, you know, you realize afterwards, like, oh, that'd be cool if this tied into here. And because there's nothing that's, you know, preventing that from happening, then you can actually do it. But there's definitely a lot of stuff where it's like this and this and this are all meant to be doing this. And so if you kind of like look back, you'll see different hints where it's like, okay, well, this character is talking about this character and they actually appear, you know, six episodes down the line. And okay, so that's who they were talking about. So there's definitely like a lot of interconnected, like moving parts.
Is that a different creative muscle, kind of, you know, building the world and creating them as opposed to sort of fleshing out character and thinking about, you know, story arc and things like that? It seems more broad. It seems different in my mind, but I mean, I'm not a creator. I don't know.
Yeah, I would say it comes down to like a whole lot of daydreaming. And because I don't draw, like I'm the writer, Keenan is the one who draws, and art takes a lot of time. So it does take quite a while to produce. And that's why for season two, we've had to use some guest artists. We've used guest artists for the first four chapters, and then Keenan's coming back for chapter five. And because there is a lot of time between, you know, like me writing the story and getting the artwork and doing all this, I do have a lot of time to plan ahead. So even right now, we're three, like as we're talking right now, we've got three chapters up on Webtoons and the fourth is coming out in a couple of days. I already have stories that I'm working on for season three, if we make it to season three. So because I'm working kind of like that far ahead, I can easily kind of like work that stuff into season two, because season two is still being like written, like not written, but it's more like it's still being produced, and I can change some dialogue here and there to like tie back to what I'm doing in season three and vice versa.
Wow. It's how do you keep it all straight in your head?
The thing that I am really bad with are names. Like I will forget a character's name and have to go back and look it up. But everything else, it's not too bad, but yeah, names, that's what I'm really bad at.
Well, now that we've gotten to see, well, and we'll talk about this in a second too, because you mentioned you sort of created season one as a standalone, and then I'm assuming based on reader reaction, we're able to come back for a season two, hoping for a season three. But talk a little bit about the reader reaction for the first season. Obviously, it did, you know, well enough, especially as you know, your first project where you said, okay, I'm not creating it to you know, make sure I have distribution with Diamond. I'm not creating it for anything other than I want to tell a good story, which I think is always the perfect starting point for a creator who wants to get his work out there in front of somebody. So talk a little bit about the series catching on and what reader reaction was like and what that experience was for you interacting with the readers as they became engrossed in the story.
Yeah. So like Webtoon readers are awesome. Like Webtoons, I love the readers are like, it's such a good community. And when I started putting my stuff on Webtoons back in Discover, I had no idea what I was doing. Like I didn't realize that featured was, you know, existed. I was just wanting to get in front of people, and people were really cool about it. You know, they were somehow finding the series. I have no idea how they found it. And then when we moved to featured, same thing, like people are just really, really, you know, awesome. There are a lot of people who are like, I'm not too sure I understand what's going on, but I just appreciate the fact that they're reading it. And, you know, hopefully as they continue reading it, they'll start seeing things come together. But yeah, the fans have been amazing. Probably my favorite things are, you know, getting fan art, you know, like someone's drawn one of the characters and, you know, shares it with me. And that means a lot, because if someone's taking time out of their day to actually draw one of the characters, it means that the character has, you know, at least spoken to them on some level. And it's very flattering that they would take the time to draw that character for me. And then the most amazing one was, we had one reader, Brittany, who tattooed Sarah on her arm. And that was just amazing. Like, I can't believe that someone got a tattoo of one of her characters.
Yeah, that is pretty awesome. You mentioned some people reaching out and not necessarily understanding what's going on. I mean, I know that it's one of those stories that I think it's got some rereadability, because you can pick up on some things later on when maybe you have more context and a little bit better understanding. But I also want you to mention there is sort of a cheat sheet, if you will, or an explanation guide that's available on the website, right? You want to tell everybody about that if they have read it, or if later on they're planning on reading it and want a little hand-holding, so to speak.
Yeah, definitely. So on, you know, witchcreekroad.com, there's a blog post called Witch Creek Road Explained. And it just kind of breaks down everything and, you know, explains what was happening, why particular things happened. And kind of, it is a really long read. So it's not something you're going to be able to read in like 5 minutes. I spent way longer writing it than I thought I would. But definitely, like, if you're confused about something with season one, reading that is probably a good way to just kind of, you know, figure things out. And I will do something like that for season two as well. But that's still like probably a couple months away.
Yeah. When I saw, cause you did a Q&A episode as well between the two seasons, which I really enjoyed, and I really like the epilogues too, because they were these little snippets of some of the fallout of season one, which you know, usually if you see an epilogue, it's like one thing, you know, think of it as sort of a Marvel end credits scene, you know, to put it in film parlance. But this was so much more than that, and it really teased some of the things that I expect to see in season two. But that's when I found out about the blog that explained everything, was in that Q&A, and I haven't had a chance yet to go and read it. And I didn't feel lost at any point during season one, but I still plan on going and reading that blog when I have time, because I always enjoy when publishers put out they call them director's cuts of the comics, where you get not necessarily a chance to have something explained that you didn't understand. But what I really enjoy is when you get the creator's reasoning behind it, because I think it adds value to the story. So that's really sort of what beyond explaining what happened in season one, it's really your chance to sort of comment on the reasons why, right? Like it's literally a director's cut.
Yeah. 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 And like, I tried to take some of the questions that people had and answer them in that. So, and it's been a long time since I've looked at it, but I think, you know, some people had questions as to, you know, one of the characters calls another character a liar. And so like, why did they call, you know, her a liar? So kind of explaining why that happened and, you know, basically breaking it down.
Yeah. Maybe a chance to put some context to some of the things that, as you mentioned earlier, you didn't necessarily have the real estate or the space to put into the story in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you put that out, what was the reaction to that blog? Did you have some readers that come back that maybe were having a little trouble understanding or needed a little bit of handholding that said, okay, you know, now I get it. Thanks a lot for doing that. Was the reaction to the blog really positive as well?
I'm not too sure. No one really reached out to me about it. A lot of people looked at it because I really don't promote my website. It's there. But, you know, I was averaging maybe like 10 people visiting it a week. And the weekend that we released the Q&A and had the link to, you know, the blog post, probably about 5,000 people went to the website and, you know, checked it out. So obviously, like, a lot of people went there. A lot of people read it. I hope they liked it. But yeah, I didn't really hear too much about it.
Yeah, I guess in that aspect, it didn't have the same sort of built-in sort of gauge of fan response that a normal episode does with the, you know, you can comment, you finish reading it and you got the comment section right there. So yeah, that's, that's interesting.
Sorry, speaking of the comments, there are so many funny people on Webtoons. Like sometimes I'm looking at the comments and legitimately they make me laugh. So, you know, thanks if you're one of those people making me laugh.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the really cool things about Webtoon is you know, that episode goes up and, you know, within just a few minutes, you've got a fan reaction. It's something that's so unique that you don't really have in any other medium, even within like print comics itself, unless, and I've talked to other creators about this, unless you go out there, you know, if you do work in the traditional print medium, unless you're out there, you know, on social media, you know, when the episode or the issue drops, you're not really getting it. And even then, it's not sort of the same initial reaction that you get from Webtoon. So as we transition into talking about Webtoon as a platform here, what is your favorite thing about the platform? Is it the fact that you get that instant fan reaction, or is it something else maybe?
There's so many things I like about Webtoons. Definitely the community. You know, the community is awesome. And being a featured comic, the support that Webtoons provides is really good. As a creator, like, you know, as someone wanting to put a comic on Webtoons, like Webtoons is a place for people to practice, for them to get their work out there, for people to do market research, because sometimes you just don't know how a comic is going to be received. And this lets you find out if it's going to be received well or, you know, crickets. It can be used as like an online portfolio. It can be used as a way to build an audience. Like there's so many things that Webtoons lets people do that overall, like, yeah, I love Webtoons.
Yeah. Something you just mentioned there, building an audience. That's something else that I wanted to ask you about. And I obviously didn't know about, you know, your first project and not doing quite so well with it. And then transitioning to Webtoon for the second one and doing so much better. And I think you mentioned that you wanted to focus this time on building an audience, making sure people, you know, knew about it. So I think you're somebody that's really well suited to answer this. When you start talking about, you know, pulling the ripcord and let me start creating a comic. I call myself a comic creator, but I've never created anything. And I know the one thing I need to do to be a comic creator is actually create a comic. So I've taken the plunge. I'm out there on Discover. My work is out there getting eyes on it. How do you build an audience? Like what's your advice to those people that are at that step? They've taken that first step. Their comic's out there. Like what worked for you?
We got lucky. Like I know what I should be doing and I don't really do it very well. Like in the end, self-promotion is, I'm not good at self-promotion, but that is something which you really need to do. Like you need to be on Instagram, you need to be on, you know, Facebook and that. And you really need to be showing off your stuff and trying to get people to look at it. On Webtoons, it's a bit harder just because when you put your stuff up, you know, you're kind of at the mercy of like, are people seeing it? But I mean, you can be posting in the forums, trying to, you know, link to it. And I guess the main thing is just doing it consistently, because the last thing you want to do is like you post something and then you wait 3 months and then you post chapter two and then you wait 3 months and you post chapter three. It would be almost better to just do like small snippets of story and do it more regularly than like really long chapters, but only once every, you know, couple months. So yeah, just consistency, beating your own drum, just making sure people know what you're doing. Because if you're creating in a bubble where no one knows what you're doing, then that audience is never going to, you know, grow.
Yeah, that's another good point. I know there's people that actually take that step of actually creating, but then they're so afraid that it won't be received well that it never sees the light of day, which is just a tragedy. If you don't get it out there in front of people, then how are you going to improve as a creator? Just, you know, take the chance, put it out
there. Yeah. And I mean, in the end, like if you're worried, then create it under pseudonym. Because in the end, like, would you rather go through life with a what if and at least I tried. Because I would rather try and fail than to just suffer with, like, why didn't I at least try?
Yeah, exactly. And like you mentioned earlier, you know, one of the things we like about the Webtoon platform is that sort of market research. Like, is there an audience out there for the story that I want to tell? Because I don't know any creators, writers particularly, who say, yeah, I've just got this one idea. I don't have any others. I just have this one idea, this one story to tell. They may have one story that they want to tell more than any other, but they always have a multitude of ideas. So you put one out there. If it doesn't catch on, it's not the right time. I think there's always an element of luck to the right people seeing it at the right time and things like that. And maybe it's just the timing was wrong for a particular project. You try something else. You know, yeah. I think that creators, most of them have many, 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 many ideas. So, you know, you put it out there on the Discover. It doesn't, you know, cost you anything but time. And it gives you a chance to find out if your story is going to catch on. If not, you move on and you try, you know, something else that may catch people's eye.
Yeah. And even like if it doesn't take off and all you've spent is time, that is still experience. Like that time that you spent drawing it and writing it, that's experience that you can put toward your next project. So it's never bad. Like even if it doesn't take off, it's not bad that you spent the time doing that because you're still honing your skills and getting better for the next project.
Yeah. And like we were mentioning about the comment section here, you know, even if it doesn't catch on and it's only two or three, maybe, you know, 20, 30 people reading it, if they're leaving comments, then they'll tell you what they don't like. And you can put that towards growth as a creator and making sure you don't make the same mistakes next time.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of many ideas, do you yourself have more ideas for stories to tell? I mean, obviously you're fully embraced and engrossed in Witch Creek Road right now. But is this a platform Webtoon that you can continue to want to use in the future to tell other stories, maybe even something outside horror?
Yeah, like definitely I've got like lots of ideas. I think most people do. It's just a matter of like trying to figure out which ones you want to focus on instead of like getting pulled in too many different directions. I could definitely see myself sticking with Webtoons for, you know, the unforeseen future. It's more about, you know, whether or not Witch Creek Road continues or if it ends after season two or season three. It's really the community that's going to decide that. But even if Witch Creek Road stops after season two, I mean, there's going to be other stories that I want to tell, and I'm not quite ready to stop. So I'll keep going.
That's good. Good to hear. I'm glad to hear that. Let's talk a little bit about the creator community at Webtoon as well, because we've been talking about the community in terms of the fans so far. I've heard from just about every creator I've had on about what a great creative community it is in terms of their colleagues, editorial staff at Webtoon, and sort of the people behind the scenes and talking with their colleagues, getting advice. Have you found that to be the case as well? Have you had a chance to interact with other Webtoon creators?
Not face to face. Definitely like Dana, who edits, Witch Creek Road. She's awesome. Love her. And you know, she's always good at giving, you know, feedback and advice and that. And so she's like a really good support network or like a support for like me and Webtoons. In terms of creators, I live on an island in BC, so I don't really get to see anyone face to face. One of these days, hopefully. But the few that I've spoken to, kind of like on Instagram or wherever, they've been really cool. And hopefully, you know, one day I can get to a big convention like New York Comic Con or, you know, another one like that where I can actually see people face to face. Because everyone that I've kind of like seen or heard about, they just sound like a, you know, really cool group of people.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, speaking as someone who goes to a lot of conventions, obviously I'm not a creator, but I have asked this question of other creators that have come on. It's always a fun scene, and I feel like and this is true not just of Webtoon creators, but creators that work for the big two and like names you would know, they come back from those conventions with their creative batteries like completely recharged just from being able to hang out with fellow creators, get excited about what other people are doing, and then also getting that chance to interact with the fans face to face and seeing people affected by the things that you're creating. You know, just like you were talking about the girl that got the tattoo. It's just so cool to get a chance. So I hope you get to experience that. It's because I think it's very worthwhile.
Yeah, no, I definitely, like, I try to go to the conventions that I can, but you know, money, time, you know, things like that definitely are a factor. But one of these days I will make it out to, you know, the East Coast or, you know, San Diego or something and just, you know, hang out, be a fan and try to meet as many people as I can.
Yeah, that's for sure. When you talk about time, that's always the biggest factor for me because, and you know this better than anybody, because it's that relentless, unforgiving deadline dance that Webtoon has. I my hat's off to any Webtoon creator who keeps a weekly schedule because it is a ton of work.
Oh yeah, and like I said, I don't draw, I just write. Kenan's my artistic partner. But these people who can both write and draw, I'm just in awe of them. Like, I wish that I had spent more time when I was younger just like investing in art and trying to like do that. My hat's off to the creators that can, like the multi-talented guys and girls who can do both.
Some of them I don't. Yeah, I can't remember who. I think Urchan maybe it was, who said when she first started, she was doing two episodes a week, writing, drawing, coloring, the whole.
Oh, wow.
That's just boggles the mind, right?
Yeah.
Well, speaking of time, I don't want to take up too much more of yours, Garth. I know you're busy creating season two here of Witch Creek Road. But before we close, I did want to give you a chance. Anything else that you want to add? Anything to say to your fans or listeners? The floor is yours.
Yeah, just, you know, thanks for reading. You know, like I said, the readers and the Webtoons community have been really awesome. And honestly, like Witch Creek Road, season two would not exist without Webtoons. Season one would have been finished, but season two would not exist without Webtoons and the community behind Webtoons. So thank you very much. Hope you enjoy reading, and you know, hopefully the stuff that we have planned is, you know, I don't know. Just thanks.
Yeah, just from what I've seen, you know, the couple episodes of season two that I've read so far, it seems like you're expanding so much on what you did with sucking us in with the kind of a focused story in season one. I can't wait to learn more about the collector and these, you know, alternate versions of some of the characters. And it has me really, really excited. So very happy myself that there's a season two.
Oh, thank you.
So as we close out here, Garth, social media, if people want to follow along with your work, know when new episodes are coming out, maybe reach out through whatever social media channels you're a member of to you know, talk to you about, maybe ask advice or talk about the story. Where's the best place online to interact?
Definitely either like Witch Creek Road on Facebook or like Garth the Geek on Instagram. So, you know, if you send like Instagram, I'm definitely a lot more active on. I don't post a lot, like maybe once every couple of days, but I'm loading it up like a couple times a day because I just enjoy seeing what people are doing. But yeah, if you've got questions or just want to like say hi, just yeah, Instagram, definitely the best way.
Awesome. Well, I'll put links to both the Instagram and the Facebook in the show notes, everybody, as well as a link to the website, witchcreekroad.com, where you can go and check out that blog if you have questions about the story or just want to kind of get more out of season one by checking out that sort of essay that Garth wrote with kind of his thoughts behind the story and sort of the director's cut mentality. Again, go to the show notes and all that information will be there. So Garth, thanks again for joining me. It was really great to have you and talk about Witch Creek Road.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.